How often do you use physics to survive? More than you might think, if we humans are like all the rest of the species on Earth. A new book called Furry Logic, The Physics of Animal Life, takes a look at some incredible examples of how animals large and small use physics every day. It's written by Mateen Durrani and Liz Callagher. He's the editor of Physics World, and she's a science and environment reporter. They join me now. And Liz, it was clear to me that you wrote the book for people who don't necessarily know a lot about physics. You do a lot to bring readers along so they can understand what exactly these animals are doing.
Yes, that's right. We tried to make it accessible for everybody. There's so many stories in there. You've got the stories of the animals, the stories of the researchers looking at the animals, and then you've got the story of the physics as well. So we really had fun weaving all those stories together.
Well, I want to get through a lot of examples here because they're so interesting what some of these animals do. Starting with the principle of heat and the red-sided garter snake, which go into burrows for the winter, and then come spring, they come out all at once, and some of the males actually become what you call she-males. Explain.
If you go to Manitoba in Canada, there are some snake pits where thousands of snakes live underground during the winter. They hibernate there because it's so cold that they bunker down for the winter. Come the spring, they come out and there are these giant balls of snakes on the ground, really cold. And it turns out that this was a huge mystery for many, many years, and people really didn't know what these snakes were doing, writhing around above the surface. And what they're trying to do is the female snakes that come out, they disappear as fast as they can. And the males that come out, they're trying to steal heat from the other snakes. So they get jumped on by all these other snakes and steal the heat and warm up. And it's called kleptothermy.
And why do they have to pretend to be females in order to do that?
Ah, well, that's the thing. What they do is they coat themselves with sex chemicals, pheromones. So it fools the other snakes into thinking they're women and they jump on top.
There's another issue that involves heat or infrared radiation. It involves the Pacific rattlesnake, which has sensing pits that can detect infrared radiation, so it can sense prey like squirrels from the heat that the squirrel produces. But the squirrels have come up with their own defense. Explain.
Well, that's right. Snakes and squirrels in California have been fighting for millions of years. But the squirrels are really clever. What they do is they know, or they've learnt that the snakes can detect infrared radiation. So that's the blood in their tails gives off this signal. So what the squirrels do is they wave their bushy tails in the air, pump lots of blood into it, and that gives off a lot of infrared radiation. And the snakes are fooled and confused and then back off because they see this very unusual signal, not just a tail standing up, but it's giving off this very unusual infrared radiation, sort of heat map on the tail. And we're not quite sure what the snakes think, but we reckon that they're confused and so they back off from the squirrel.
Well, Liz, do we know why they do these things? Have they figured out that physics are important?
That's a really interesting question. There's a book about folk physics, and it seems that even humans who don't know physics formally use physics near enough in that we know if we drop something, we can work out that it will go in a kind of a parabola to the floor, and that's good enough. So these animals, they don't know physics in an intellectual way, but they know enough to use it in the same way that, say, a skateboarder would use physics as they fly through the air and be able to land.
Well, one of the things that you point out is something that I'm sure everyone who's listening has seen, but maybe didn't realize that it involves physics, which is when a dog gets out of the water and shakes that water off.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, and no dog's stupid enough to let evaporation take its course, which is, you know, so what a dog does, it shakes itself dry by rotating its backbone back and forth. And people have calculated how much energy it saves by doing it rather than letting the water disappear through evaporation. And it saves, I think, about 500th of the energy. And in fact, the interesting thing is the rules that the dog follows to shake itself dry are followed by all hairy animals. And there's some fantastic studies of everything from little rats all the way up to big bears. They all follow this same shaking rule.
And is that innate?
I guess it is. I think that's probably something that they don't learn from their parents, although I guess they could learn it by copying their parents. But I would guess that it's instinctive.
We're speaking with Liz Callagher and Mateen Durrani. Their new book is called Furry Logic, The Physics of Animal Life. And let's get to another example here. The harlequin mantis shrimp, which is very small, but can break open a crab with its clubs because of the way that it hits that crab. Can you tell us about that one?
Sure. Yeah. These little shrimp are amazing. They're not only multicolored and absolutely beautiful looking, but they have some of the fastest accelerations in nature. So they, to get at the crab meat that they want to eat, they shoot out their elbows on their second pair of, let's call them legs, and they shoot them out so fast that the amount of force they get through Newton's second law, that's related to the acceleration. And because their muscles, they can't build up that acceleration just by themselves. They hold their muscles shut and squeeze them very slowly and then release a latch that lets their leg unfold incredibly fast. And that creates enough force to smash through the crab.
Wow.
And their problems aren't over quite then, because after they've hit a few crabs for a few meals, they could damage themselves, but they actually then have a really clever structure to their shell to protect their own shell from getting cracked.
Huh. Amazing. And another one that people probably have seen before but maybe didn't realize what was going on is when a cat drinks water. It's not actually scooping that water up and putting it into its mouth, is it?
No. The guy who first came studied in depth how cats drink was a guy at a Massachusetts Institute of Technology, Roman Stocker, and he was at home one morning watching his cat, Cutter, having over breakfast. He was watching his cat drink, and it suddenly occurred to him, you know, how on earth does this cat drink? So, like all good scientists, he went back to his lab, took some high-speed video equipment back home, and did some slow-motion footage of the cat drinking. And that's right, cat will layer its tongue on the surface of the liquid. It doesn't enter the liquid, and then it lifts the tip of the tongue up very slowly, and it forms a column of liquid that it then snaps into its mouth and captures a little bit of liquid every time. And it repeats that several times every second, so it's quite a quick process.
So you couldn't see it with your naked eye if you tried to watch?
No, you really have to have these high-speed cameras, and then if you slow down the footage, you can watch it. The fantastic thing is this guy did a really good research paper that was on the cover of the journal Science, which is one of the top journals. So out of all the bits of work he did, he said to me that, you know, this one had more kudos, had more recognition than anything he's ever done. So, you know, studying animals can really be good for your career if you're a scientist.
Hmm. Well, there's one more that I really want to get to because it's so interesting, which is how a gecko is able to walk across the ceiling.
Sure. Yeah, geckos are amazing. They use a really quite complicated form of physics called van der Waals forces, which are these tiny little forces that you get between molecules if you get the molecules really, really close up. So by putting its feet very close to the ceiling, and it has fleshy folds on its feet and lots of hairs. So by having all these hairs, it gets a huge surface area. And adding up all the very small forces over a lot of area gives the gecko enough force in total that it can walk upside down on the ceiling. And if it falls off, it can actually hold its whole body weight with just one foot and possibly even one toe.
So why haven't we been able to figure out a way to make shoes like that for humans?
Good question. Some people are actually trying. There's a material called geck skin, which copies the folds on the feet. And they did manage to get a guy to climb up a glass wall using a pair of gloves made of this material. So that's pretty clever.
That's going to be a hot Christmas gift when that one comes to fruition. So what was the purpose of all of this? I mean, these are all really interesting facts, but why did you want to point out how much animals use physics?
I think it partly is my job as editor of Physics World, and Liz works with me at IP Publishing, also as a science journalist. You know, we're always on the lookout for interesting ways to explain what scientists get up to. And I think a lot of people get quite scared by science for whatever reason or don't find it interesting. But, you know, we always think people love animals. And what a cool way of kind of talking about some exciting physics topics using the guise of animals. And everyone loves cats, everyone loves dogs. There are fish in the book, there are bees and all sorts of animals. So using that as a method of just talking about some of the interesting physics that, you know, we don't go, some of it's not terribly difficult, it's fairly sort of straightforward, but, you know, fun as well.
If I can just add to that, it's often at some of the interfaces between different types of science where some of the most interesting stuff happens. So finding out about animals and physics can bring us whole new areas.
And what about us as humans? I mean, did you, as you looked through what other animals are doing, did you find out anything interesting about what we do with physics in our own daily lives?
One of the things that really interested me was when researchers are looking at animal senses, when animals can sense things that we can't. So there were researchers looking at how turtles use magnetism to navigate, and another researcher looking at how bees use electric fields. And in both cases, we can't probably sense those fields. So that's something that I found fascinating.
That's Liz Callagher and Mateen Durrani. Their new book is called Furry Logic, The Physics of Animal Life. Thanks to both of you for joining us.
Brilliant. Lovely. Nice to talk to you.
Thank you.